grocery stores, clothing departments, pharmacies, hotels, apartments, and houses. While aisles overflow with food, people starve. While racks are full with clothes, people need some. While shelves stockpile medicine, people are sick. And while too many rooms to count are left vacant, people are homeless. Karl Marx spent his life trying to understand capitalism. He went to great lengths to spell out the contradiction between the needs of capital and the needs of human beings. Michael Leibowitz is a Marxist economist. He is also professor emeritus of economics at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia. His book, Marxist Political Economy of the Working Class, is being re-released this June. I spoke with Michael about Marx's understanding of capital's needs versus human needs. I began by asking Michael about Marx's overall aim when he envisioned a good society. Here's his response.
Well, I think that, you know, Marx's whole perspective, you know, you have to understand Marx's perspective on the good society and on what he saw as wealth and human and the wealth of human beings, if you understand the nature of his criticism of capitalism. For Marx, you know, his whole perspective was one of the importance of the development of human potential, the idea of that there was a possibility to develop rich human beings with rich human needs, in which, you know, the goal really was the development of all human potential, all human powers as an end in itself. And, you know, he looked for the potential of the development of a society that could allow for this. And I think it's essential to realize that this is, in fact, the unexplained premise of Marx's work on capital. You know, this conception of a society in which a worker's own need for self-development could be realized, and this idea of rich human beings. Because when you understand that conception of human wealth, then you can see that the opening of Marx's capital is already a condemnation, because it opens by saying that wealth in a society dominated by the capitalist mode of production appears as an immense collection of commodities. You know, that's a condemnation when you start from the perspective of wealth as, in fact, the full development of human potential.
So does this humane understanding of human needs and relations, how does this contrast with the existing relations and human needs under capitalism?
Well, the basic story that Marx, you know, tells in Capital is, you know, how, you know, it's about what the nature of capital is and how this power over people, you know, is really the workers' own power. It's their own power turned against them. And for Marx, it's not an accident that happens, because it's the precise result of the nature of capitalist social relations, of capitalist relations of production. You know, and capitalist relations of production for Marx are based on the fact that there are two classes. There is the capitalist whose goal is wealth. Their goal is more value, increasing the value, their value. The goal is profits. That's what dominates their every move. And on the other hand, you have workers, people who have no means of production, for themselves, who, in order to survive, must sell their ability to work to the capitalist. They must sell a property. They sell the one thing that they do have, which is a property right, the right to use their ability to perform labor to the capitalist for a given time period. And for Marx, if you want to understand capitalism, you have to understand that the nature of that relationship and then the dynamics that flow logically, you know, from that relationship. And the dynamic is that the capitalist, for example, only buys labor power, the ability to perform labor from the worker, if that is going to ensure that he can make profits, if he can get additional value, if he can get surplus value. So we start from, you know, Marx's description of capitalism is describing it as a market economy, in which workers are selling something and capitalists are selling things. But you know, it's not any market, you know, economy. The unique characteristic of capitalism capitalist relations for Marx is that the worker sells labor power to the capitalist, and the capitalist is oriented toward profit. And everything flows out of that. Because after that transaction, when the worker has surrendered this property right to the capitalist in order to get money to buy the things that she needs, on a regular daily basis, then certain characteristics flow necessarily from that. They flow within the whole process of production, within the sphere of production. And one thing that flows immediately from this sale of labor power to the capitalist is that the worker works under the direction, control, and supervision of the capitalist. The capitalist has purchased that right, to purchase the right to supervise and direct the worker. And then the other key characteristic of this, transaction which has occurred within, the marketplace, this particular unique transaction, is that because she has sold her ability to perform labor to the capitalist, because the capitalist is the owner of that ability to perform labor, that, in fact, the capitalist is the owner of all the products produced by the worker. The worker has no property rights in the products produced. And that, for example, you can see the real contrast between a situation in, let's say, a cooperative, or in which workers have property rights in the products they produce. But in the capitalist relation, where the worker has sold labor power, only the capitalist has those property rights. And that's then a key characteristic, because insofar as the capitalist is the beneficiary of everything that happens within the workplace, the capitalist uses his control within the workplace in order to attempt to get more and more surplus value, more and more profits from the exploitation of the worker. He does this by attempting to expand the amount of labor performed by the worker, by increasing the workday or by intensifying the workday. And so you get that as a way in which capital tries to increase the amount of surplus value. He tries to drive down wages and does anything possible to drive down wages or to increase the workday, separating workers, finding ways to divide them, and to prevent them from allying in any way. Because one of the things that, it's not fully developed in Marx's Capital, because he intended to talk about this elsewhere and did talk about this in many of his political writings, is that workers, in fact, combine to struggle against capital's tendency to increase the rate of exploitation, to increase the workday, to reduce wages, and they do this by forming trade unions and by organizing, by reducing the separations among themselves, and so they struggle against the workday. They struggle against intensification of the workday, and that's that struggle of workers to reduce the workday is, in fact, the source of May Day itself, which was centered on the struggle for the 8-hour day, the struggle of workers to reduce the workday. So that's capital tries to increase the rate of exploitation, drive down wages, increase the workday. Workers struggle against that. So you have very clearly characteristic of capitalism within the workplace is class struggle happening there, because each side, the capitalists and workers, have their own needs, have their own and have their own ways of struggling for their needs.
So workers are struggling for better working conditions and shorter work days, and struggling for their needs, struggling for more time. How do time and needs and struggle combined for what workers want, and that idea, Marx's idea of achieving human potential and all that?
Well, Marx argues, and he talks about this in Capital, but he also talks about this in some of the preliminary works for Capital that he planned to draw on further. He talks about how workers need time. They need time to develop themselves, and he refers at one point to time for education, for intellectual development, for the fulfillment of social functions, for social intercourse, for free play of the vital forces of his body and his mind. And Marx says, time is the room for human development, And he says, quote, "A man who has no free time to dispose of, whose whole lifetime, apart from the mere physical interruptions by sleep, meals, and so forth, is absorbed by his labor for the capitalist, is less than a beast of burden," end of quote. that was part of this whole process of a society in which there would be the potential for the development of all human powers as an end in itself.
Now, technological development has surpassed anything Marx could have probably ever imagined, and there seems to be infinitely more potential to meet these human needs. How did Marx account for technological process in his overall analysis?
Well, first of all, let me correct you. It's technological progress that has not exceeded anything that Marx imagined. You know, it certainly exceeded anything that existed at the time. But, in fact, Marx writes extensively in his writings from 1857, 1858, what are known as the Grundrisse, about a, you know, capitalism developing a mode of production appropriate to itself. And his description is one in which workers basically are in a position of the attendance of machines, in which the social brain has been incorporated in machines which carry out all the major operations, and workers now are observers of that operation more than, you know, people engaged in, you know, difficult manual labor, etc. So what he did was, in fact, understand the logic of the machine and logic of the incorporation of the social brain into the machine. And so he imagined, in fact, developments of automated factories, of factories which in which all key operations were carried out by robots, etc., like that. But Marx argued, and one of the things that Marx argues in this context is that capital, when it introduces this new technology, which has the potential for lowering the workday and allowing for the full development of human capacities, that capital is not doing it for that reason. The reason the capital introduces, you know, new machinery and reorganizes the workplace and introduces new technology is because in its attempt to expand, in its attempt to grow by, you know, and obtain more surplus value, it comes up against the struggle of workers, you know, against the, you know, the extension of the workday, against the driving down of wages. And so capital is driven by its goal of increasing surplus value. It's driven to alter the workplace, to try to increase productivity. So, and it does so not because it has a, you know, the welfare of human beings in mind. It does so in order to obtain, to increase the productivity of workers, holding workers' wages constant in order thereby to increase surplus value. So it, you know, capital does that, and, I don't know whether what your
well.
Would be, so I don't want to anticipate it.
That's okay. We're going right along that train, and I'm wondering how this gap, this growing gap between human needs, systemic unemployment, and technological development, and this gap getting bigger. Where does this lead to? Is there a eventual crisis or periodic crisis? What's Marx's analysis of where this is headed?
Well, the thing about it, you know, is that with this increasing, you know, productivity, that, you know, the question is, well, why, if you have increasing productivity, which, you know, presumably leads to more products produced, you know, which leads to, you know, presumably falling prices, why aren't workers the beneficiaries of that? And for Marx, the workers are not the beneficiaries of it because the very process of introducing new machinery also displaces workers, also creates unemployment, increases the separation among workers. So they're not in a position to claim the results of the advantages that have been, the result of the social brain in this way. And so what you have is an increasing rate of exploitation, and a situation in which capital gains relative to workers as a result of the new technology, because it, again, is the owner of the products of labor produced by workers. And so in that situation, you have a shift in the distribution of income. The distribution of income is shifting away from, you know, workers to capital. Now, internationally, we can see that as capital flows, you know, goes to low-wage countries, countries where workers are not organized, where they can, you know, have them work long hours, where they can pay them very low wages, but working in many cases with modern technology. In that situation, you have internationally a very significant growth in the rate of exploitation, a very significant shift in the world distribution of income. Well, you know, one of the problems, though, that capital faces, one is its contradiction when it produces, when it generates rising, amounts of surplus value contained in commodities, capital doesn't want the commodities. Capital wants to be able to sell those commodities, to take those commodities and make the surplus value contained in them real by exchanging them for money. But the problem that it runs into is when the income distribution, shifts in the favor of capital, when you have the rising rate of exploitation, capital runs into problems. It has to sell commodities. It needs to expand the market. And it tries to do that by investing in the sphere of circulation, by advertising, by various methods of creating new needs in order to sell commodities containing more and more surplus value. And that's why you see, so much, advertisement, so much money spent on sponsoring sports events, et cetera, like that on television, because of the capital's need to expand the market in the context of the productivity that's been generated in the sphere of production, because it must sell those commodities. But the tendency that capital runs into is its tendency to produce surplus value more rapidly than it can be realized, to create commodities that contain surplus value more rapidly than they can sell it. And so capital comes up periodically against crises in which it is unable to realize the surplus value contained in commodities. And those crises mean, if it can't sell the commodities, it won't produce them. And so, the inability to sell commodities means that it reduces, production, et cetera, generates unemployment, which, of course, makes the situation worse. And so you have these periodic crises that mark capitalism from the beginning of capitalism to the present time.
So
one of the things that Marx is very clear on is crises aren't permanent. Crises contain within them their own solutions, because crises are a destruction of capital. Weak capitals are destroyed. Their concentration of industry occurs in the context of crisis. And capital can, if this is all that the story of capital is about, then capital can go through a crisis, destroy weak capitals in the process, and then come out, prepared to, to expand again in a subsequent period. Business cycles don't put an end to capitalism for Marx.
So within this context of the spectacle of capitalism and not meeting diverse human needs, why do people continue to accept it?
Well, it's a very significant question. Because, in a crisis, the nature of capital becomes clear. The nature of capitalism becomes clear. Because you can see then that capitalism has nothing to do with human needs. You can see at that time, that what determines the amount of production that occurs is profits and only profits. So the question is, why don't, people in the context of crisis realize this, anti-human nature of capitalism and put an end to it? That's a question, that I think Marx hasn't been sufficiently recognized, that Marx's answer to that was. Marx's answer was, we have to recognize that the very nature of the capitalist system creates a mystification of the nature of capital. It always looks, for example, like workers aren't exploited, for example. And furthermore, not only does it look like workers aren't exploited, it also looks like capital is the source of all productivity, rather than the social brain, rather than the collective worker. And for Marx, it's important to understand that he recognized that capitalism, by its very nature, tends to create workers who look upon the system as common sense, who think that, well, of course, this is the way, an economy is and must be. There's one point, there's a section in the volume one of Capital that I keep quoting to people, because I think people haven't recognized, that Marx was aware of this. Because he said at one point, the advance of capitalist production develops a working class which by education, tradition, and habit looks upon the requirements of that mode as self-evident natural laws. The organization of the capitalist process of production, once it is fully developed, breaks down all resistance. End of quote. And, that's a statement which says, look, capitalism produces the workers it needs. It produces workers with a consciousness capitalism as necessary, as the only way in which they can satisfy any of their needs.
So
the answer that Marx, you know, gives, I know the answer that Marx gives is, well, if you look, though, at capitalism, you can see that capitalism is not only producing workers who look upon it as common sense, but it's also producing workers who are engaged in constant struggle against capitalism, against capital. Struggle, you know, for limited goals. Struggle to reduce the workday, a struggle to increase their wages in order to satisfy some more of their needs. That capitalism, for Marx, produces class struggle on the part of workers.
Marx spoke of revolutionary practice. I'm wondering if you could make a connection for us. How does revolutionary practice help transcend capitalism and achieve a life based on human needs?
One of the central ideas that is present in Marx from his earliest writings to his, you know, his last writings is the concept that he defines as revolutionary practice. And revolutionary practice for Marx is the simultaneous changing of circumstances and self-change. In other words, that workers in the process of struggle for these limited needs transform themselves. They come to see the need to unify. They come to struggle together. And they transform themselves, and through their struggles, they become other than capital's product. They produce themselves in a different way. And they produce themselves in a way in which they start to question the nature of capitalism, question what is happening. And this is why Marx saw that it was important to write, you know, a book on capital, to explain to workers what capitalism was, because as a result of their own struggles, workers come to ask these questions. Why do we keep coming up against these problems? And that was what Marx's, you know, discussion in his work Capital was all about, which was to give workers a way.